Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, all part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. You can find all of our podcasts, local folks, chatting local things. It is Sunday. My name is Tom. I'll be your guide. No. Troop leader. I like that. Sunday morning. Nice. November the 15th. Halfway there. I think this is the... I don't know. This is like one of the time. This is the time of the year that I really, really, really struggle. And I don't mean like having a drink. But I really struggle with resentments, lack of communication, lack of being honest, and financial insecurity, money, fear. The whole fucking group comes rolling in around this time of year. It's a given. It is a given. I am always on the verge of being bankrupt. I am always on the verge of losing everything. If you live like that, if you're going through that, I know that I am going through it. And it's that damn self, you know. I guess, and I was thinking about this yesterday. I mean, is self the same as ego? It's that ego. It's ego. I think for me there's a difference. You know, self's worried about getting invited to the party. Ego is worried about looking good at the party. Does that make any sense? I was talking to my buddy Carlos this morning about his wife and his family. And, you know, we're all kind of going through the same shit right now. It's this, you know, and if you're, I mean, unless you're under a rock. And it's weird living here at the beach because we are in a little bit of a bubble here at the beach. And but they're talking about shutting everything back down again. Here we go. Starts to create a little bit of anxiety and fear. What aren't we going to get? What am I not going to get if we get shut down? Money. Money's the first thing that comes to mind because money's happiness, right, everybody? It's official. That's what I've been taught. No money, no happy. A garden full of little baby resentments growing up this time of year and fear and anxiety. And I've really had to turn back to my running game. I'm really having to make a great effort at getting in a run in the morning. It is, to me, the ultimate amount of suffering. It really beats back self a bit for me. It's a huge thing. It starts to, for me, starts solving my problems, starts clearing my head, allows me to start seeing things for what they are and not what I'm making out them to be.
He said, there was nothing to fear, boy. And he said, worthless are your tears, boy. And just realize your senses and realize your worth. Just realize your essence first. I'll never be the same again. I want to walk in the sun.
There it is. You know, how I mean, how responsible do I have to be for my own happiness? I mean, I've talked about this before. There's great songs I've played in the past that really bring that stuff up. You know, I decide how I feel today. How come when things get kind of crazy, a lot of these simple little things that I know to do to help me stay somewhat sane go out the window? I forget. You know, there's a, you know, I could say, oh, you know, it's that, and I hate to use the word devil, but it's the opposite of the good stuff, right? It's that voice that says, stop running, you're tired, you should stop running, your legs hurt, that voice. They're going to close down, we're going to lose everything. That voice just shows up strong. And the voice of reason, of, you know, of humility, of surrender, it heads out. I'll be back. And we grind and suffer, knowing the whole time that there is a solution to solve this anxiety problem. I've said this 1,000 times. I just said it to my buddy Carlos, and I'm going to say it right now. The words of my buddy Matt: as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. People say, oh my God, I'm not smoking any crack or paying for hookers. You know, I'm not a smart guy. I'm not a very smart person. And things need to be dumbed down a bit for me. You know, you could sit there and tell me 100 facts of why this is going to work out or why this isn't going to work out. And if we stay on track doing this and everyone's participating, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't get that. As long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. I understand that. I've never paid for a hooker. I have bought crack, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I mean, isn't that funny? I have a lot of shame behind that. Yeah, I smoke crack. 10 years before that, we were freebase and it was fine. But now you put crack and you associate it with like a group of folks or whatever it is that we do. And all of a sudden now, ooh, that's bad. Same shit. But I remember when I was doing that, my life was not good. And it doesn't even need to be that extreme. Just back in the day when I was drinking, I knew that at any moment on any day, shit could go bad. You know, I was able to get a new car. And this car, I put tint on the windows. It was tinted. I just put tint on the side front, you know, driver side and passenger side window. And I was explaining to somebody that, you know, once you get that done, that you need to take that, you know, you get a waiver signed by your doctor or whatever. And you need to take the waiver down to the DMV so that the DMV can add it to your registration so that when a state police officer or whoever it is may be behind you and sees the tent, they can bring up your license and on the information that comes up on their screen, it will say that you have a tent waiver. Don't pull them over for that. And I was talking to a lady, and she's like, oh, my husband has the waiver, but he's never taken it to the DMV. And I was like, well, you know. And I can remember my dad always telling me when I was young, you know, if there's ever a problem with the car, let me know, and I'll have it fixed. I don't need the cops pulling you over for something stupid. Because back in those days, what was I trying to avoid? And this happened a lot. Being pulled over for something stupid and ended up getting into a lot more trouble for something that didn't. For one, if I had chosen not to behave that way, it would have, you know, excluded a lot of problems. But, you know, not managing the little things that expose the bigger things. And I was talking to my client about this, and it's nice that I don't drink and do drugs. Because that's all you're trying to, that's what you're really trying to avoid is that, you know, because when are they going to pull you over for 10? At midnight, right? 1 in the morning. Leaving the bar, leaving the club, leaving the friends. You know, there's nothing worse than rolling down the highway at midnight with tinted windows and no waiver because the shit's going to hit the fan. You know, we've gone to, we go to Firefly. We've been up to, I don't know, some different concerts, and I've had to drive. We took the kids to Philly to see a couple bands, and I've had to drive home at midnight. And just being really grateful that I'm not drunk or on drugs, which I have done many times. Not with kids. I didn't have kids back then, but, you know, and all it takes is that waiver. You know, what is it that I have to do today to stay out of the shit? You know, what waivers do I need to make for myself? You know, my buddy Carlos, he's a smart guy. So he's very into politics. He's very into current events. He's very into local events, politics, taxes, you know, the future, the past, the present, all this shit. This is the problem when you get too smart. Your fucking nose is in too much shit. And he's still, you know, he's still stressed out. I mean, he didn't say it, but I can tell. Because he used an example of somebody else who was very extreme one way, opposite of the way he is. So it's clear that this election and the politics are still playing a role in his daily thinking. See, for me, that's driving down the highway with tent without a waiver. You're setting yourself up for fucking trouble. I was telling him today, I go, you know, this is the time where we really have to focus on staying in our moment, staying on our square. It's none of our business. I don't know if you guys know this. This is kind of an interesting fact. We live in the town where Joe Biden lives, where Joe Biden has a beach house here. And he's been here, you know, he's from Delaware, he's from Wilmington. So he's been coming down to the beach, you know, for however many, 100 years, right? We've seen him. I've seen him before, you know, the part in politics that he played prior to being the vice president, you know, he would come down, but, you know, senator, nobody cares. As a vice president, he would come down here and, you know, but nobody really cared. But now he's the president, or the president-elect, future president. And the whole world changes down here when that happens. And one of the things that happens with the president is that a ton of people follow him around. So he came down here. I guess he's been down here the end of last week. And through the weekend, he's been here. I think my wife said he must have gone home today or this morning or last night. I can't confirm that. But at the end of Rehoboth Avenue, which is this main road that leads right to the beach with the bandstand and, you know, the circle and all the, you know, small businesses that, you know, that are downtown, CNN, Fox News, all these news vans and trucks. I mean, the big boys, you know, not like the little WRDE, you know, Ford Fiesta that has, you know, the TV logo on the side. These are like big, you know, national news vans. And they're all down here. My wife's like, he's fucking up the beach. He's fucking up our town. I'm like, well, honey, he's been here for a long time. Yeah, but look at all the vans and stuff. And I go, we don't know. I said, they're going to figure it out. You know. If Joe Biden is as thoughtful and democratic as he comes off to be, he should try to be a considerate of the town. I know that where he lives, and I won't say it because I don't know. I don't want to. I don't know. But I'm sure where he lives, which my buddy and I, James, we ride our bikes through his neighborhood all the time. Run there. We run at Gordon's Pond. He lives just by Gordon's Pond. We spend a lot of time in that area. It's a state park. We go there. We drive a cars on the beach there. They may, you know, they may put up like some guard shacks in his neighborhood. I don't know. I know when Obama became president, they had, I think he kept a house in Washington, D.C., Georgetown, I think. And they had guard shacks on every end of the street, you know, on the beginning and the end of the block that he lived on. You had to literally go through a guard shack to get to your house if you lived on that same street. So it'll be interesting. But, you know, there's things that I can do to prevent myself from getting all aggravated about this. I love getting aggravated with something that I didn't even do. Like, you know, all the CNN trucks are down at the beach. They're tying up the bandstand. They're wrecking the town. We didn't even go to the beach. We didn't go down there this weekend. I had no desire to go down there. Didn't want to go down there before I knew, and didn't want to go down after I knew. So what do I care what's going on down there? I'm not going down there. If I had planned to go down there, I would figure out some plans. Maybe I'd do a little research and learn what I need to learn to make us going down there a little easier. And that's kind of what I'm telling, you know, my buddy Carlos, and I've had this conversation with his wife, because his wife is an angel, and she's just wears her emotions on her sleeve, and she's very worried. You know, the unique thing about Carlos and I's family is that our sons Charlie and David went to school together, so they're 15. He has a daughter that's a little younger, and my son's a little younger, and my daughter's a little younger than that. So, but we have kids, you know, and they're living through this right now. And you know, her and I have talked about, you know, we just need to mind our own business. But fuck, it's hard, right? It's hard to stay out of our own business. And Carlos is like, you know, you're so good at really about staying in the moment and really focusing on, you know, what reality is and keeping things really simple. I go, yeah, I have to do that, because unlike a lot of people where they just get sad and depressed and mope around, I start thinking that I can drink. Right? I mean, you start chiseling away at that foundation of everything that I know is to be right and true. Start chiseling away at it, and if I don't manage it and I don't take care of it, you know, we were watching, I think I said this on a podcast the other day, I was watching Joe Rogan, and he had, I think, Tony Hinchcliffe on, and they drank on the podcast, and I watched Tony, and he takes the glass and with the whiskey or bourbon, whatever it is, brown juice at the bottom, and he puts it to his lips, and he takes this little baby sip. And for a brief second, I thought, maybe I could drink like that. I just drank it too fast. That maybe was my problem. If I sip it, because I hated the way that Jack tasted or bourbon. I didn't like any of the flavor of liquor. I mean, I did it to get drunk. I didn't even try to fool myself by saying I liked the taste. I hated the taste. I just wanted to get fucked up. But I saw Tony sip it. I'm like, maybe I could sip it. And, you know, I've done this long enough. I've fucked up too many times to know that that's silly. I already know that's silly. And it was, you know, the voice of reason showed up. And, I have no desire to drink. But it's managing all the other shit in my life for that one small moment where it looks like sipping whiskey may work. And Carlos didn't get that. He didn't understand. I mean, I think he understood once I explained it to him, but he didn't realize. I think he just thought that I was really like some sort of like spiritual guy, and I'm really not. But I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. And it's important. But that's the extreme for me. You know, I know when I blow my gasket, if I'm in the fucking bottle, right? It's gone. I've dropped the ball a lot for me to get to that point. But people that don't struggle with alcohol, that don't struggle with whatever it is that exposes them, can find themselves just grinding it out in life with sadness and worry, all the things that self isn't getting. You know, we don't go, hey, my God, a fucking shit gets shut down, man. We don't make any money in our business. Whoa, we're really going to have to roll up our sleeves and get creative and figure out how to work our ways through it, right? Because I'm smart, right? I'm not smoking crack. I'm not paying for hookers. So I'm free. I'm here. I'm available. I'm ready to do whatever it is that I need to do to survive. That's not the voice that shows up. Be a lot better, right? No, the voice that shows up is like, shit, how am I going to get another job? I'm getting too old to be working random jobs. I mean, this was my career. What happens if I lose everything? We're going to lose the house. We're going to lose my kids. We're going to sleep under an overpass. Actually, you probably couldn't even fucking get the overpass spot now. Everybody else has taken them. We'd actually be sleeping alongside a highway exposed to all the elements. But I can tell you, in my 52 years, I have never slept under an underpass. I've never been homeless. I've never lost everything. I've given everything away a couple times. How much work do I want to do to keep my serenity? A lot. Has anybody watched The Social Dilemma? I've had friends posting on Facebook, oh my God, the most amazing show ever. Watch it. I watched it. Surprise. I love, and I got a little fucking annoyed watching it, quite honestly. I love these shows where, you know, five, six, seven guys narrate a show explaining to us the fucked up thing they created, and now me, needs to feel bad about using it. Let these guys that created this shit sit there and preach to me for an hour and a half how stupid I am for using it. I'm not insane because of social media. I have a very, very, very boring social media feed, actually. My Facebook is so homogenized, there's nothing. Because if anybody has popped up some shit on my Facebook, I just delete them. Nothing personal, it's the Facebook game, right? It's a social media game. Some people like you, some people don't. Yeah, there's times between clients that I'll sit in my chair and look out the window and look at my Instagram or my Facebook. So what? Why do you care? The whole world has become a fucking filter. From the logos on our shirts to the fucking logo swishes on our shoes to the fucking things on our hats to our social media to our business. It's all filters. We've been filtering ourselves since the beginning. The part that did bother me is this, you know, it's the kids, you know, the 13-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, the 15-year-olds. And they use the example of this girl, and she, you know, nowadays you can put all these filters on yourself and really make yourself look great and post it. And she did that, and then she posted this picture of herself, and it was cute. You know, she was probably 12, 13-year-old little girl. Struggling, trying to figure out our role as a 12-year-old and our role as the future and what kind of role we want to play as we grow older. And she posted this picture, and all the little kids were like, oh my God, you look beautiful. Awesome. And then somebody wrote, could you make your ears any bigger? And her ears, you know, she could hear well, put it that way. And they were sticking out the side of, you know, she had long black hair and they were sticking out a little bit on each side. And that's the shit that all she could fucking focus on is that they were making fun of her ears. And then she changed how she wore her hair and it was a whole thing. And I'm like, ugh, that part sucks. And the worst part about that is when that stuff kind of happens to you, you reach out to your parents and say, oh my God, these people made fun of my ears. And we say, oh my God, honey, your ears are fine. It is what it is. Don't worry about it. You know, she's isolated and she kept those thoughts to herself. And at 13, you don't have any tools, right? You don't know. But it's adults that know better. Actually, I think there's adults out there that don't have any tools to understand and work through some of this shit. But it all comes down to us not getting what we want. And what does this little girl want? She wants to be recognized, and she doesn't want anybody saying anything about her ears. But it all comes back to me for the suffering. And that's what running does for me. And I haven't been running as much. And I'm trying to get back into it. I think I've ran 4 times this week. Not big runs, 4 miles. Took some pictures. You can follow me on I'm Sorry About Last Night Instagram. I'll share my pictures if you care. It's a beautiful place where I live. But I have got to do that kind of shit. So this other bullshit does not consume me, just as it does to the 13-year-old girl and just as it does to the 50-year-old people. Find something to do. Find something inconvenient. Find something uncomfortable. Find something that makes you full of fear and requires effort, some physical labor. Do it. Go for a run. Find the mental medication. You choose how you want to feel. Do a little fourth and fifth step on every little thing. My ears. What do I wish? What don't I like? You know, there. I'll always refer to that. The reference in the Big Book, Mr. Brown. I hate Mr. Brown. I hate my ears. I hate my financial insecurity. I hate my position. I hate Mr. Brown. Okay, that's fine. You want to hate Mr. Brown? Hate Mr. Brown. You want to hate your financial position? Hate your financial position. But why? I just hate him. I just hate it. I hate them. I hate all of it. All right, well, let's really take a look at it. It turns out Mr. Brown makes a little more money than us. Turns out Mr. Brown has a little bit of a cuter wife than I do, or, you know, whatever the situation is. Oh, okay. Well, what I really hate is I hate Mr. Brown has more money than me. He has a better wife than me. He has a better car than me, and he has a better house than me. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Now we're starting to understand what we hate about it. What it turns out is that I hate the fact that I didn't work a little harder. Maybe if you don't even hate that, but I think it's important that you recognize it so you stop fucking blaming Mr. Brown. Oh, brother. All right, let me read this Daily Reflections. I almost forgot. Let me read Daily Reflections and then let's wrap this shit up, people. Hope everyone's having a great day. Hope everyone's staying sober and enjoying it. All right, let's see if I can read this without fucking it up. All right, here we go. November 15th, vital sustenance. Those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. That's a good point. And for the same reason, when we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. I think that's just what I just said, people. There it is. do the work, recognize it, suffer, find humility, relieve us from that stress. Step 11 doesn't have to be over. Oh God, here we go. Step 11 doesn't have to overwhelm me. Conscious contact with God can be as simple, as profound as conscious contact with another human being. That's right, out loud. Out loud is important. I can smile, I can listen, I can forgive. Every encounter with another is an opportunity for prayer, for acknowledging God's presence within me. Today I can bring myself a little closer to my higher power. The more I choose to seek the beauty of God's work in other people, the more certain of his presence I will become. It's just what I said. It's just what I said in a lot of different words, but it's the same shit. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to have fear. Turn it over, say it out loud, share it. I was telling Carlos, I went through that a couple of weeks ago where I was depressed. All of it made me depressed, right? And I had to say it out loud. And every client that sat in my chair that week, I was like, I'm depressed. This is why. My buddy Matt used to say, share your stories out loud with somebody. It cuts them in half. You don't have to reach out to God. Share a story with somebody that lets them know the kind of fear you're having. And believe me, that is a relationship with a higher power.
Looking forward to the fall, making weapons of peace for the